Well, I finally took it in and everything is fine. And even though Google is working.
Okay.
So that's why I was fixing for those 2 weeks.
Okay. So what is it that you're being able to monitor now?
Now I'm not sure, right, because now there are a lot of things, because what events should I monitor are, that's not clear.
Have you thought about it?
Yeah, I was thinking, but I mean, typically people do L2 cache miss or L1 cache miss.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure if that would be helpful.
What are the other things that you're thinking about?
The execution time spent doesn't help here.
But you don't need performance counters for getting execution time.
No.
I'm talking specifically about performance counters. What information?
The only thing, only useful information will be the cache miss.
There's nothing else that you can get?
There's a lot of stuff, but I don't know that would be.
Is there any way to get number of page faults, for instance? There is?
Page faults?
Yes. Reads by some other name?
I have to look it carefully.
Okay.
But my main concern is that I did the experiments in different machines. Will that be helpful now?
Well, I think we already talked about this, right? Which is that the first thing you need to do is to reproduce the same results on the new machine or similar trends. And if you can reproduce similar trends, then there might be, you know, we can use this machine itself. So which means you have to run the application, which is a problematic application, and see if the anomalous behavior that we saw before, that we are unable to explain, is still visible or is still valid for the new machine, when run on the new machine. Did you try running any of the benchmarks on the new machine?
Yeah, you
did. Okay. Which is the benchmark that we really need to explain?
I think there are parts for all of the benchmark except postmark. First is the CPU benchmark.
Mm-hmm.
The problematic part was that if you increase the computing IO, it actually improves the performance.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one part.
Yeah.
And there is, for OLTP benchmark, I think there is no one explanation missing, so I'm not sure what.
Mm.
So these are the two main. The others, I think we explained.
I see. Do you have any performance counters that tell you the average scheduling time per process or something like that?
No.
Do you understand what I'm asking though?
Yeah.
What?
I mean, the time spent for a process inside the CPU?
Yeah. How much time the process spends on the CPU before getting context switched out? Before
the average time.
Yeah, the average CPU runtime of the process, is there something like that? Because one possibility is maybe that the cap enforcements are not correct. Right. So we set up the CPU benchmark with a certain cap value, right, for the VM that's running the benchmark.
Mm-hmm.
And then the competing IO domain, we also set up a CPU cap there.
Mm-hmm.
Did we set up a CPU cap?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then for the DOM 0, do we set up CPU cap?
No.
No. Okay. But can you set up a CPU cap for DOM 0? So as you increase the competing IO, what is going to happen with the competing IO domain CPU utilization?
Competing domain CPU utilization, it will increase.
It will?
The competing domain CPU utilization will increase. Utilization will increase if you increase the load in that machine.
Increase the IO.
Yeah.
That machine. CPU utilization rate. I think we need to probably go a little bit more into detail in the competing IO application. So how does that application work again?
It just creates a number of threads, and each thread issues a read request.
One read request.
One read request.
That's it.
Yeah.
And stops.
No, it doesn't stop.
Okay.
It goes on.
You mean, so it's continuously, not just one read?
No.
Okay. So it reads one block and then does what?
It just reads it, and then after reading again, it takes another request.
Reads again.
Reads again.
Without waiting.
There is a wait.
Okay. So
I forgot.
Remember all the details so we can have...
There is a wait between each read request.
Okay. Okay, so how do you control the wait? How is the wait implemented?
It's using some start timing mechanism.
Okay, what kind of timing mechanism is that? I'm trying to figure out how the CPU utilization of the competing IO domain will change as you change the competing IO.
I think it's a nano wait or something.
Nano sleep?
Nano sleep, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nano sleep, yeah, exactly. I think I remember each thread waits for 10 milliseconds.
Each thread waits for 10 milliseconds?
Yeah.
So the waiting time is fixed?
Waiting time is fixed for each thread.
So how do you control the competing IO operations per second?
By adjusting the number of threads.
Adjusting the number of threads. Okay. So if you increase the competing IO ops, then the number of threads in the competing domain will increase, right?
The reason we introduce threads is because you cannot sleep beyond 10 millisecond granularity. I mean, if you go for lesser, it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Do we have information about the CPU utilization of competing IO domain?
Yeah, once I collected all the three, down zero, down competing IO domain and application view.
Okay. So did we check the competing IO domain CPU utilization for these?
Yeah, we checked.
Okay. So what did we find? Do you remember what we found?
It was not fully utilized, I would say.
It is not fully utilized?
I'm sorry. No, it was fully utilized when I was actually issuing large number of IO requests. And when I was using lesser IO requests, it was not fully utilized.
Okay.
So it increases as you expect. If you increase the read number of read requests, it will actually increase.
Mm-hmm. The anomaly that we are having with the CPU benchmark is that increase the competing IO and the performance of the benchmark improves.
Yes.
It improves substantially or it improves just a little bit? Or?
It improves quite a fair amount.
Mm-hmm.
Not just 5%, 6% difference, no.
Okay. And it continues to improve?
It continues to improve.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's one. What is the other anomaly that we...
That's a... Just remember, I think it's OLTP benchmark.
OLTP. Varying IO nights was found to have no significant effect on the transactions per second. We could not find any reasonable explanation. Green IO nights. So IO nights did not have any effect on
OLTP.
And so we have the CPU utilization for OLTP as well.
Yeah, I think I have.
So here we say that there was largely memory dependent.
Yeah.
CPS increased with an increase in memory, but the dependency was non-linear. Second, TPS was found to be inversely proportional to the competing disk IOPS, but the influence was mild. Third, the dependency on CAP was peculiar. CAP is increased, TPS first increases, but beyond a certain point it starts decreasing. That we explain. The last one we did not explain, which is that IO night does not have a significant effect on the TPS. And this was found to be consistent. In the experiment, do we explain how we create the competing IOs?
Yeah.
Okay. But here we say that we vary the sleep interval as well as the number of threads to vary the
for some experiments I did use 1 millisecond. And also 1 second.
I see. To slow down the IO up?
Slow down. For postmark I did that.
Okay, and then is there any other anomaly or that's it?
That's the thing.
Those two.
Especially if we find the CPU benchmark explanation, it will be okay.
I think so, yeah. I think that's quite interesting. I mean, there may be something, we can start maybe something new because of that. If we find some.
But as I remember that I read from the paper that the gap enforcement is not very accurate.
Yeah.
I mean, if it says 20, it could be around 24 to in between 16 to 24. Because I observed that. For example, the competing domain utilization sometimes is greater than 20%. Which should not be the case.
I see.
Because I fixed the gap for computing 20 for all the experiments. Sometimes I see it using 22%, 23%, 24%.
But even then, you were saying that the computing domain CPU utilization increases when you increase the computing IO, right? So. Even if the cap is not enforced, it should only, as you increase the competing IO, it should negatively influence.
Negatively influence, yeah. It doesn't explain the behavior.
What's happening here?
Well, I think why it should influence, because if there is a new CPU,
it should not influence at all.
It should not influence.
Because IO is not being performed by the benchmark, right? There is no IO.
No.
It's only CPU utilization. Now the cat stuff, I think the problem, okay, also
as you increase the competing I/O, the DOM zero CPU utilization is going to go up, right? Now DOM zero is unbounded, it's uncapped.
Mm-hmm.
So which means that one potential effect would be that the available CPU for the benchmark is going down as you increase.
No, I checked it. If you sum all the CPU utilization of all those benchmarks, all the domains, it's always less than 100%.
Mm-hmm.
A lot less than 100%.
Now, the thing though is that what we are looking at is average numbers. Right? I mean, did we explore the timeline of the CPU utilization first?
No, it's average CPU utilization.
It's averaged across all the measurements, right? So it could be that there is, you know, at different points in time, there are peaks in the CPU utilization which affect the performance. So one thing which you could try to do, assuming that you still have the data.
No, I have only the average data.
I see. This is a general advice, that when you're collecting data, especially when the data is small, like in this case, there is no reason to, I know that we are reporting summary information, but summary information comes with some information loss, right? So if you want to dig further into that at some point, like in this case, then it would be important to have the individual data points as well, as opposed to just the average. I mean, this is just general advice for, you know, for you in the future, because running experiments is very expensive in terms of your time. So you don't want to throw away any of that data. Does that make sense? Because
yeah.
I mean, I know it's convenient to just throw away data, but later on it can be painful because you might actually need it.
Yeah, because when you actually start collecting information, actually I didn't think about all the things could happen.
Yeah, so the thing is, when you're collecting data, running experiments for several days like this, then think about the value of the data, how valuable that data is, right? And what are you potentially losing by throwing away the data? You're losing all that effort and time. So if you think about it from that perspective, then you will know what data to keep and what you can throw away. There might be some data that you can easily reproduce, and it's okay to throw it away. But even in that case, you may be making some assumptions that you still have access to that machine, the same piece of hardware, the same setup. Although it runs for 5 seconds, without access to the same infrastructure, you cannot run the experiment again. So even though it might be a very simple experiment, very short running experiment, you know, the setup might be huge. The setup time might be huge. And therefore, the data becomes valuable again. And you are not creating any data which requires like terabytes of storage, right? So that's not really a issue. And sometimes that can become a problem, and I've, you know, told everyone in the lab that don't throw away data. If you need to buy more storage, we'll buy more storage, right? And I think at this point we have adequate amount of extra storage that we shouldn't run into any space issues. Okay. All right, so which means, so there's one possibility is that although the average numbers are below 100%, the instantaneous values could be greater than 100%, right? And which means that perhaps there is an influence of DOM zero CPU utilization. The other is also, we are looking at the average CPU utilization for determining if cap is enforced or not. What about instantaneous enforcement of CPU utilization? What is the granularity of the cap enforcement? And those are the kinds of things that we might be able to answer if we had those individual data points. Okay, so maybe what you can do is to
first, I think first step is to reproduce things.
First step is to reproduce
things. Pretty straightforward.
Okay.
It's just that I have to use the same set of allocation values.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. The problem is that you have a much faster CPU, which means that the impact of CPU allocations can be quite different, but what we are looking for is not the absolute value of the transactions per second, the memory operations per second, but CPU operations per second, yeah. So if the trends match, then we are still okay, and we can hypothesize that the same rationale or reasons that created the anomaly in the other setup is also occurring here.
But if trends doesn't match, then I think it's just,
if the trends don't match, then we give up, I guess. Or what we could do is we could go back to the original setup and get more fine-grained information about the CPU utilization at each instant measurement. So those are some things that now having said all that, explaining this anomaly will certainly add some value to this paper. But that value comes at the cost of your time. And at this point it seems like you're also working on other things, which may be more valuable than this specific task. Right. So.
But it's interesting if we find some solution. If we can reason that.
Yeah, it is certainly interesting. Yeah. So all I'm saying is that don't spend too much time on this stuff. Spend.
I will do it today. To finish it. But if I don't have a trend, then it's easier.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to give up just.
Okay.
But if we have a trend, then I think we need to dig further.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, that's good. Alright.
So, in the meanwhile, we need to send this in, right? When is the deadline for this?
6th of November.
6th of November, okay. Yeah, I see that we can, you know, reduce several paragraphs very easily.
Okay.
There's also white space, but that's not a whole lot. We certainly have to make the descriptions more concise. I mean, there were, I think, at least one of the reviewers was saying that section 3 is too long,
mm-hmm.
right? So we could try and compress that. Maybe instead of having two subsections, we can just combine the Zen-specific model parameter discussions with the generic model parameters discussion, and then you're substantially less. And we have to also put in some effort to reduce the description, make them more concise. Now, about the applications, I think the applications are okay.
I think we need to explain those.
Yeah. And then the model training procedure is also important. I think that has some value.
Section 3 is a better target.
Section 3 is a good target. The introduction
Yeah, introduction.
Is also a good target, I think.
What about section 52?
Section 2, yeah. So I was thinking, what if we just completely remove that? Yeah, completely remove section 2. So what are we talking about here? We provide some background, right? Okay, so it's saying virtualization is becoming more important. Okay, so this is not even necessary. Everybody knows about this stuff. Within each physical host, performance depends on the resource allocations and data center administrators maximize the SLA based revenue. Change. So here, I think these two paragraphs are just very introductory. So I think this can be either removed or compressed substantially.
So should we talk about the global goal of our, why do we need to
model? I think that's here, in this paragraph onwards.
But is it important, or we can just focus on the modeling itself?
So here, one of this is the,
I think automated,
is the motivation, right? We argue for developing a model that can be used by data center administrators to determine expected performance given a specific.
I think that dynamic modeling thing of the segment here.
Yeah. So I think it is good to talk about this stuff. I don't know about the figure, maybe.
I think you could use this figure, right?
Yeah, if you use this figure, we need to save this space. Okay, so move this thing up and then put the input parameters here.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, can you do that for this figure?
Uh-huh.
So, we have everything more compact.
Like at that line. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, we can get two more lines in of text. So do this anyway, because I think this figure is sort of nice to have. Okay. Let me know when you make this figure change. And then the background section becomes kind of short. And
it's okay, I guess. Paper is a short film.
Yeah, I think that's okay.
10 pages is only.
Yeah, and I think we need to substantially work on.
I think we could just combine the gen specific and generic.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too.
Too much text.
Yeah, because what we are losing is all of this space. See. Right, all of this space is being lost because we have subsections and subsections. So we don't need this, and then we'll save this also. So this will become 3.1, and so on.
Section 4 and 5, I think, is important. It's better to keep it.
Yeah, section 4 and 5, yeah. And this one needs to be, need to do something about this. So you added the standard deviation, I saw that. Now,
Okay, they are
very good. It's good. It's nice. It's not a good metric for all.
So one thing which we need to do is to switch these around. So switch these two columns. We do present it. The standard deviation and the 90th percentile, because you know the traditional metrics are these guys, right? Average, median, and standard deviation. Then we have provide a 90th percentile also.
Sort of we figured out that.
The only unusual case, I guess, usually the standard deviation should be lower than the 90th percentile, except in this case. Wherein they are comparable, actually, standard deviation is greater. Okay? Yeah. This is unusual, actually. Can you recheck these numbers?
Mm-hmm. It's for the postmark.
For the postmark with Ian and Elliot.
Okay.
And while you are at it, I think I checked everything. Where I think all the standard deviation numbers are lower, but just carefully check again. Might have missed something. I don't think so.
Maybe some printing mistake or typing mistake. Could be.
Could be that. Is there anything else?
No, it's fine.
I think the rest are okay.
I think it could be a switch or typing.
Okay, so check on this. There was also some suggestion.
I think I will check the table very carefully.
Okay.
There are too many numbers.
Yeah. Now about the linear models. This is something which we could potentially, and there was also a reviewer who was suggesting that this is, you don't need to say so much about regression because it doesn't, it's not really the winning solution, right? So that might be something to think about. You can possibly save some space by not presenting these as formula, but just in text. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. I would like to have the formula.
Yeah, but the thing is that we're losing four lines of text because of that.
Let's see if we can, after doing all those things, we can save a lot of space.
And I guess the other thing is that we can describe this formula more easily in the text, very easily in the text, right, by saying what are the terms that we use.
Okay.
Right. I'm sure there's some standard terminology for saying, okay, these are
interactive
terms or whatever it is. Right.
Correlation. Basically, it's a correlation coefficient.
Yeah, okay, so let's see if we can retain it, maybe, and we run still short of space, then.
Or we could give the generic formula, regression formula, combining all those two, all the three.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, it could be that for some regression, some of the coefficients are zero. Then the equation will be a little too long, actually.
Yeah. Let's see how the rest of the paper turns out. And again, this is something which is consuming a lot of space. Maybe we can embed it into the text rather than have it as separate formulae.
all those things in text.
Yeah. Instead of creating a formula environment for it. Equation environment, I guess. Okay, so here somewhere we have to clarify that these are randomly chosen data points, right? Randomly chosen,
yeah.
Subsets.
Mm-hmm.
Describe this in the text. Okay, the next major thing I think is the related work and references. So
here we can reduce, right? For the related work, we don't, for the final paper we don't need to provide it.
Yeah, that's true. And we need to still retain the important one. I don't know why HPCA guys have a different submission and final version format.
For first it's the same?
No, it's not. The initial and final are the same. For most conferences there it is the same.
Okay. So only the number of the pages are restricted in some case.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand why they want to have double spaced, because it's easier to review papers and write comments and things like that. But then they should...
But is it completely two different formats?
So these are two completely different formats, but even in terms of the content, you can fit into these two formats. It's quite different. But I think they probably miscalculated.
Especially the figures are all messed up in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Now the other thing which we need to do is to fit this figure in one column. Can we fit this in one column by making these guys thinner? Do you have the source GNU plot here in the repository? GNU plot source and data files?
Not in the repository.
Put it in and I can work on it. Make this single column. Because we can save a whole bunch of space here.
Maybe I can do this also.
What?
Maybe I can do that also.
You want to do it? Okay.
Yeah.
Should be helpful. Okay, so you're going to do certain things. Text the table. Okay. Fix this. Make it single column.
And the figure one.
And the figure one. Yeah.
What about the figure? The training figure is this needs to be more prominent. Or
training figure. Yeah, if you can make it look nicer, I think there was some. Okay, fix this line. You see, this line is not straight. Can you see that?
Uh-huh.
I think otherwise it's okay. The other lines look okay. Oh yeah, so this instead of this data collection, it's called it collect data. Because everything else is
verb.
Yeah, is a verb. So okay, so you're working on all the figures. The graph here and the stick. Okay?
Okay.
Alright, let's try to finish this soon so we can move on to the next thing.
Okay.
So we'll meet at 12 o'clock, just remind everyone. we'll go to lunch.
11:45 you said.
11:45, yes. Okay, 11:45.
See you. Thank you.